this morning, the Conference Committee on Senate File 1835 and House File 2180 will come to order. First, I'd just like to wish everybody a belated Mother's Day and thank the House, my House counterparts, for agreeing that yesterday was not a great day to me. So what I was thinking that we could do this morning is, well, first let me just say that there are two main provisions of the bill that proved to be more contentious. The narrowing language, which was beginning on lines 8.14 of the Senate bill. So that was the language about how the school district ultimately ends up choosing what health insurance plan. And then the second piece that was a major difference between the House and Senate bill as it passed off the floor was the self-insurance piece. Because as you likely all know in the audience, self-insured school districts were exempt from getting PEAT bids in the Senate version of the bill. So we have a proposal that I would like to have Senate Council explain now. It's the A22 amendment. And right now we'll just have Mr. Stang walk through it and explain it. And then we'll set the A22 amendment aside for right now and start moving through the sections on a side-by-side that we believe that we can begin to start adopting some of the language. And then we'll come back to the A22 amendment, take testimony from anyone who would like to testify on the A22 amendment, and then recess to the call of the chair. Sound good? So, Mr. Singh, could you, we'll let people have a minute to get the A22.
Madam Chair, while that's being distributed, I just want to, for the House conferees, because we haven't been together over the weekend, say that I know there's been a lot of work done over the weekend, particularly among the Senate, various advocates, and I've had an opportunity to be in communication with Senator Sieben and with folks from the school districts and from Education Minnesota. And the A22 is the result of a lot of that conversation, but not something that has been fully agreed to. And I want the House conferees, and John Ward is not here right now, Representative Ward is not here right now, but I want Representative Davids to know before we get started that, and for people in the audience, that this is the first time that Representative Davids or Representative Ward will have seen this, and so it's important, as you've indicated, that there's time for both testimony, but also a recess for people to give this some consideration and to give the House a chance to respond as a group. So thank you for that.
Sounds good. So, Mr. Stang, could you please walk through the A22 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. The A22 amendment, it reproduces all of Subdivision 8 of the bill in Section 471.6161 all together in one piece so people can follow it more easily. And this subdivision is the one that seemed to contain most of the consequential differences left in the bill. The first three paragraphs, A, B, and C, are language we addressed earlier and adopted some minor wording changes and so forth, but basically there's no difference there from what we've seen before, other than the line on 1.13, which was not in the Senate side, that self-insured school districts have to follow a more limited set of procedures. So that is now in this language. The main changes start when you get to paragraph D, which goes through the request for proposal process and what happens there. The way it works is all initial proposals have to come in and have to be opened no less than 90 days prior to the plan's renewal date in the presence of up to three representatives that are selected by the exclusive representative of the largest group of employees. Government data practices law applies to the data in the proposals, and there's a cross-reference to the section applicable there. Starting on line 1.26, the representatives picked by the exclusive representative are subject to the sanctions in government data practices law for use of the data. So they must maintain it just like a government entity or the school district would, and if they don't, they're subject to criminal and civil sanctions. Paragraph E specifies that after the initial proposals come in, the school district, in consultation with the representatives that have been selected, is able to negotiate with any entity that submitted a proposal in order to reduce costs or improve services under the proposal. Following those negotiations, any entity that submitted an initial proposal may submit a final proposal which incorporates the negotiations with the school district. That's due no less than 75 days prior to the plan's renewal date. At that point, all the final proposals are opened in the presence of the representatives. And notwithstanding the government data practice law, at that point, all the data in the final proposals and the initial proposals and any data associated with the proposals is public data at that point. At that point, the school district is able to choose from any of the proposals they received, either the initial proposals or final proposals, without further negotiations, but not sooner than 10 days after everything becomes public. Paragraph F is the essentially the self-insured language from the House bill with the following difference. If you look at paragraph 4 on line 2.17, a district that is self-insured on or before the date of enactment or that is self-insured with more than 1,000 insured lives may, but they don't have to, get a bid from PEEP. Other than that, the language is essentially as it was in the House.
Thank you, Mr. Singh, and welcome, Representative Ward and Senator Miller. We were just going over the A22 amendment, which largely addresses two of the outstanding issues in the bill. As I see it, the narrowing language, it has a different proposal that's outlined in the bill that I've discussed with you, Senator Miller, and then the self-insurance piece. So the A22 amendment states that districts that are self-insured either on the date of enactment or before it, or have more than 1,000 insured lives, which for the public is my understanding is approximately 470 or so employees in a school district, those districts do not have, still have to get three bids, but don't have to get, one of them does not have to be a PEEP bid. So if members are comfortable, we'll set the A22 aside for right now.
Madam Chair,
Representative Davids.
Before we do that, I've got a couple of real quick questions, and maybe staff would have the numbers or could get them. On page 2 of the A22 amendment, line 2.17, when we talk about the self-insureds, it says, you know, after the date of enactment that 1,000 lives or above are kind of don't have to participate in the PEEP bid. What's the lowest number for self-insured plan that there is in the state? In other words, is there a self-insured of 200 lives? That'd be one question. Second question is, how many self-insured are there today in Minnesota? And then of that, how many of that? I guess basically I'd like to see the breakdown between how many are above 1,000 lives that wouldn't be affected by anything as far as required to go to PEEP for a bid, and how many are under that. And the enacting date, I think, is July 1st. I don't think a whole lot of folks could go in and smaller groups could become self-insured that quickly, I wouldn't think. But so if we could get some numbers as to how many self-insureds there are in the state, how many are less than 1,000, and how many are above 1,000 lives?
Mr. I mean, Representative Davids, I'm not sure that Mr. Stang has that data, but perhaps someone in the audience, either from the School District Association or Education Minnesota, has that data. I know I heard some of it over the weekend, but I don't know if anyone has it readily available, or we could... Okay.
Madam Chair, we can go on. I just, that's what I'm thinking on the amendments.
Or do you have it, James? Mr. Hager? Mr. Hager, welcome to the conference committee. Just state your name, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. James Hager with Education Minnesota, and Madam Chair, Representative Davids and conferees. Our data shows that there are 48 school districts that have over 1,000 lives based on the 2012-2013 staffing numbers. Our current data shows 31 districts that are self-insured. And I can provide you, if we're at some point going to recess, I can get the list of both the self-insured and the over 1,000 lives at that time. There are a few districts, obviously, that are under 1,000 lives and also self-insured currently. Most of them are sort of in the, as Senator Sieben mentioned, 476 employees is the benchmark that we use. Most are somewhere between 200 or 300 in that 476 number, but we will provide that list when the conferees rejoin later.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. Just apologies, Representative Ward and I were on another conference committee that was meeting at 9 o'clock, so that's why we're a little bit late this morning. So I understand this correctly, Madam Chair, on line 2.17. So if a district is currently self-insured, that's on or before the date of enactment, or if they have over 1,000 in insured lives, they still need to get three quotes, but it doesn't have to be a PEEP quote. Is that correct?
Correct. So, Representative Ward.
But it can include a PEEP quote.
Correct. It could.
I just want to clarify that as well.
So let's set the 822 amendment aside for the moment, members, and if the House is comfortable, we can begin to go through and adopt some of the language from the side-by-side. If that's okay. So on Section 1 of the side-by-side, it's the same. The council recommended that we adopt the House language in Section 1.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Stang.
I had a chance to talk briefly with Mr. Pender prior to the hearing this morning, and I think we would continue to agree with that, but put a period at the end of Subdivision 8 because we rejiggered all the paragraphs and so forth in Subdivision 8 and wouldn't want to miss anything there. I think that might be the best way to go.
Okay, so with that change incorporated, Senator Jensen moves the House language on Section 1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. In Section 2, Senator Jensen will also move the House language. Just for the public and for the conferees, you'll recall in our last conference committee meeting, there were some minor word changes that we proposed, so we'll incorporate those into these suggestions. So Senator Jensen moves the House language on Section 2. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. We're going to skip over Section 3 of the Senate language and Section 4 of the Senate language. Members, just and for the public, just so you're aware, this is making this language, it was only in the Senate provision. It would have made the service co-ops subject to the open meeting law. And after discussions with our House counterparts, we as the Senate are willing to not adopt that language. Section 5 on the Senate language, the major difference between the House and Senate language, this is Section 3 of the House, Section 5 of the Senate. The Senate adopted language that says that a wellness plan that's mutually agreed upon by the districts and the exclusive rep is not considered, am I explaining this right, Mr. Singh, is not considered
an incentive.
An incentive, thank you. So we would move the Senate, Senator Jensen moves Section 5 of the Senate language. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Singh.
Earlier we had adopted the Subdivision 10 reference the House has is just a more precise cross-reference there, so I would assume your motion would still include that.
Correct. So we'll adopt that or incorporate that Subdivision 10 reference into the Senate language. On that motion, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Section 6 of the Senate language and 7 of the Senate language, up to line 4.28 of the Senate language on R4. Looking at that language, there are just a couple differences that we already adopted in the previous conference committee report. The Senate language uses the word refund in 3.18 and references or uses the word section on 3.19. We would also incorporate the word is from line 2.12 on the House side, which I believe we already did in the last conference committee report. But otherwise, all of the language up to lines 4.28 is the same. So Senator Jensen moves the Senate language for Section 6 with that one is word change incorporated into it. Questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Prevails. So then on 3.21 of the House language or 4.29 of the Senate language, council proposed that the House language is actually a better fit. So again, this is 3.21 to 3.24. Senator Jensen moves the language, the House language, on 3.21 to 3.24. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails. And then Section 6 of the House language. We would propose that we move the House language for Section 6. There are a couple differences that I'll point out. This is also Section 8 for the on the Senate language. On lines 4.31 of the House language, this is referencing charter school districts. In consultation with the charter schools, and my House counterparts, we thought that we would adopt the two-year provision that's contained in the House version on 4.31. And then there were also some word changes that we incorporated in the last conference committee, which are referenced to health insurance coverage and group health insurance coverage on 4.30, 3.2, and 3.4. of the House language. And then in Senator Jensen's motion, it also includes the line on line 6.14 of the Senate language, there's the word section, which council recommended we adopt that. So just to be clear, we would adopt the Senate language, or excuse me, the House language for Section 6. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to confirm that the charter schools were supportive of this, going every 2 years versus every 3 years?
We did reach out to Mr. Piccolo, and they were fine with that. I don't see him here. If he has a problem with it, he can come back and testify later, but I assure you that he is fine with it.
Thank you.
So Senator Jensen moves the House language on Section 6 with those word changes incorporated. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. So then we're moving on to R6. At the bottom of R5, we would move the language is the same. I should have done this in my last motion. Senator Jensen moves the House language, Section 7 on R5 and R6. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Then on page R6, this is Section 10 of the Senate language. We would propose moving the Senate language. And there were a couple of small differences in here. Council, could you please explain, Mr. Stain, could you please explain the language on Section 11 of the Senate language? I can't remember what the difference is. And
Madam Chair, this was in the bill as originally drafted on both sides. Apparently it came out of the House at some point, but I kind of view it as technical conforming language that certainly doesn't do any harm, and I think I'd recommend we include it.
Any discussion? Then Senator Jensen moves the Senate language on Sections 10, 11, and 12. Remember, Section 12 is the same in both bills. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. So now, members, we're going to skip over Section 13 of the Senate language and Section 10 of the House language, because that is what the A22 amendment is about. And we're skipping over some more sections, it looks like. So then we're moving to so we're moving on page R8 to the Section 11 of the House language. The difference between Section 11 of the House bill and Section 14 of the Senate is that the House language says that a rep of the exclusive bargaining unit is authorized to make decisions about a school district's group insurance coverage as defined in Section 471-6161. Mr. Singh, will you remind me what that is about? Oh, I'm sorry. I know what it is. So this is about the GIF ban, and this the House proposed to also make the representative of the bargaining unit subject to the GIF ban, as are the school board members and the superintendents and principals. And if you'd like that language, I am fine taking that, Representative Murphy. or if you want to put it aside for now, we can discuss it. I'm fine doing that, too.
Let's set it aside for now, but just to be clear with the Senate, that language is about an exclusive rep who has the authority to make a decision, so it is very narrowly drafted. Let's just set it aside, and we can take it up when we need after the recess.
Maybe we could ask council, too, to weigh in on, since we're proposing to modify the decisions, if it is even still applicable. I'm not sure. So then, setting that aside, moving to the last section, which is the effective dates. Mr. Singh, my understanding was that council preferred the Senate language, or council thought that the Senate language was better. Should we wait to adopt this until we decide what we do on the 822 amendment?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure we've ever really discussed this. There are some differences here. The House made essentially the entire bill effective July 1st. And what the Senate has done is those provisions related to PEEP and the proposal process essentially would be effective the day following final enactment and apply to requests for proposals that started after that date. So it's kind of two ways of approaching it. But I don't think council has made any recommendation on which way the committee should go.
No, I'm sorry. That was wrong. I remembered now that this language, the effective date, we changed this in the Senate to accommodate St. Paul School District, which had some concerns and wanted and liked this language. So if the House is okay, we could adopt the Senate language on the effective date?
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if council could just make sure we understand how this interacts with the 822.
Well, Madam Chair, would it be better just to wait to do the effective date after we discuss and adopt or
Madam Chair, a couple points, Madam Chair. First, all the sections numbers are different now because we've taken sections in and out, so I'm not sure what sections are left in the bill. So we almost need to see what's left and then decide, you know, which ones conform with kind of the approach we took on that. So you might want to defer that.
Okay, so we'll wait on that section too.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. So if folks are prepared now, and I know we didn't give you enough time and we'll ask for testimony again before the bill is, before we wrap up the conference committee. But now if people are here and want to testify on the 822 amendment, I think we have time to do that now, and I just want to reiterate again that we won't adopt we won't make a motion to adopt the 822 amendment until after a recess to give people more time to look at it. But Mr. Walseth, if you want to come to the table.
Madam Chair and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. I appreciate the work you've done today so far in adopting the provisions that you've adopted. I wanted to clarify Mr. Hagar's testimony just briefly. There are the districts that are participating in service cooperative pools are self-insured. So the number of self-insured districts in the state is quite large. In fact, over the last decade or more, we've seen a large conversion from about 20% of the districts in the state.
Mr. Walseth? I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want
to... Specific to the 822?
No. I'm a little bit confused in that when this bill was moving through the Senate, I never had the impression that you were representing that the service co-ops are self-insured. So this language in the amendment, in my opinion, was just clarifying language done at the suggestion of council that service co-ops were not self-insured. So this is pretty new. I mean, I don't mean to pause, but I just don't want to skip over that too quickly because that's a pretty big change for you to say now that service co-ops are self-insured. I mean, we never heard that before. I don't know if you did on the House side, but wow.
Well, Madam Chair, members, with all due respect, they never came up in conversation that we were lobbying for the self-insured exemption. That was a different coalition of people working on that. I've never asked on behalf of my client to be exempt from the bill. We don't have a problem going out and getting PEEP bids for our districts. And when the Senator Bonhoff offered that amendment in Senate Finance, I didn't get up and testify that we have to have that or that in some way the service cooperatives were involved in that effort.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, ma'am, with all due respect, I mean, we weren't. That was not our amendment. This whole self-insured exemption thing is not our amendment. And now it's spilling, the dilemma now is it's spilling over into the way the service cooperatives do business and have been doing business for a long, long time.
I didn't mean to interrupt. So, Mr. Walseth, then the clarifying language, if the service co-ops don't have a problem getting a PEAT bid, then I didn't mean to interrupt, but could you just explain what the... Is there any concerns with the A22 then?
So, Madam Chair, I think on Clause G, I think that's workable, but you may want some clarifying language there. I think what really has got me concerned is Section 14, which wasn't discussed this morning in the A22, where the new language says that the district members of a service cooperative pool are not self-insured for the purposes of the bid process. And if you're not self-insured for the purposes of the bid process, then you're just not self-insured because you're not getting a self-insured bid. So I think in Clause G is where you want to focus your effort, and that is the use of the service cooperatives are utilizing a joint power statute to pool those districts. And what you're saying there is they're not, districts aren't solely, self-insured solely by using a joint powers, but in there somewhere to require also that through that joint powers they're also getting a PEAT bid. And I don't have a, you know, I don't have a language written out for you at the moment, but I think that's where we can, if I understand the intent correctly, that Education Minnesota wants my client to go get PEAT bids, I think that's where we can do it. But to prohibit it in Section 14 and say they just simply are not self-insured, that's going to be a major upsetting of the apple cart for hundreds of school districts currently self-insured.
Mr. Walseth,
cooperatives.
I'm sorry, I don't follow the reasoning. So, but you testified a minute ago that you were fine getting, that the service co-ops were fine getting PEAT bids, which my understanding of the language is, this is clarifying that service co-ops would be subject to getting a PEAT bid or would be required to get one of their bids would be a PEAT bid. But your concern is that the language in G doesn't clarify that they...
Madam Chair, I'm fine with the way G is written, but I don't think that's going to accomplish what you and Education Minnesota want to do. My bigger concern is with Section 14, which is an absolute prohibition on districts participating in service cooperative pools on being self-insured.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Singh?
I don't read it that way.
Could you explain how the intent of... Or what it, what
all Section 14 says is for the purpose of this bidding process, districts in a service co-op self-insurance pool aren't self-insured. For no other purpose are we saying they're not self-insured.
And Madam Chair, I would say if you're not self-insured going into the bidding process, then there's only one other option.
What?
That's to getting a fully insured insurance pool.
Senator Jensen.
Well, I think we need a better definition of what self-insured is, because to me, self-insured is a definite underwriting process. The way that it's handled through the insurance side of it is completely different. So if there are differences in the service co-ops, how they... I mean, self-insured isn't just we have somebody else administer our plan. It's the amount of money that you put in as a district. So that should be something that should be easily identified within every school district, whether or not their insurance plan is self-insured or not self-insured. So there should be somebody that we can bring in to give us that clarity so that the school districts know, too, that, you know, it's not just something you say, oh, I'm self-insured because we have someone else running it. So I don't know who that would be, if there's anybody that can talk to that, but I think if we're going to change the definition of self-insured for one instance, we should have a good understanding of what self-insured is legally.
Mr. Walseth.
Madam Chair, Senator General, I agree. The Department of Commerce is the one who can come in and tell us what self-insured, full insured are. They would tell you this co-op pools are self-insured. What I think we need to understand is what you're trying to get at with this language is Is the intent to define what the service cooperatives are, or is the intent to make sure the cooperatives are getting PFIDs? And I think we need to, I'd like to know that.
Well, Mr. Walseth, my intent with the language in the amendment is to, the clarification was that that co-ops should have to get a PEAT bid. And if you don't think that that is what this is saying, then Mr. Singh, I don't know if you if you got distracted, but heard what Senator Jensen said about how there may need to be some more further clarification of what a self-insured school district is, and if you agree with that or think that's something we should continue to work on.
Madam Chair, I think I'm starting to understand a little. I think we may have to look at this a little closer. I think he's saying they wouldn't be able to go out and get a bid for third-party administrative services under the language. Is that right? The service co-ops could not, because the service co-ops are defined as an entity providing coverage under Subdivision 1 now. You may need to think it through a little bit more.
So, Mr. Walseth, we're not adopting this language now. I think now, is everybody clear about what the intent is? That maybe the words don't quite say what we want it to say. But at least from my perspective, the thought is we want the service co-ops to be subject to the bill, as are the school districts. And if that's not saying that, then, or if it's not crystal clear, then we can still work on this. But Representative Davis and then Representative Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it begs the question, if the service co-ops really don't have a problem with going out to get PEAT bids, then wouldn't the House language be more appropriate and just say you get a PEAT bid? I guess the question is, if they're not, don't have concerns about it, who does? Why wouldn't we just accept the House language? It's very easy to get a PEAT bid.
Well, I think that I'd have to look back at the language, but this was clarification language that was trying to make it clear that service co-ops should have to get a PEAT bid, and it was suggested by council initially that this maybe needed to be clarified. So obviously, it's clarifying that they're subject to the PEAT bid, but could have other consequences that we still probably need to work on a little bit, it looks like.
And then thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe to Mr. Walseth, if the service co-ops are not in opposition to the House language, who is?
The House language with respect to the co-ops
PFIDs,
solely?
The PFIDs. To the PFIDs.
The co-ops aren't, as Mr. Walseth said.
Madam Chair, for the record.
But the self-insured districts are opposed to the... This language came about because the self-insured school districts liked the Senate version of the bill that passed off the floor that exempted them from having to get a PEAT bid. And so this amendment came about as a result of negotiations between Representative Murphy and I over the self-insured school districts.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Murphy.
And thank you, Mr. Walseth. And we've been talking over the self-insured exemption since these bills have passed off the floor in the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate. And I continue to worry about creating an exemption, and then the exemption becoming larger. Because of the different entities and the way that they're interpreting it. And Mr. Walseth's questions leave me with more questions than answers. I'm not quite sure, and I've worried about this, but with the relationship between the school districts and the language that is in the A22 talks about the school districts, but they are in a relationship with the service co-ops and the joint powers And as we exempt one group from the bidding process because they're concerned about scrutiny, that exemption is going to continue to grow. And so before we leave here, if this piece of legislation is going to yield the results, and I do want to say, Mr. Walsett, that I know that you made reference to Education Minnesota, but this is legislation that Senator Sieben and I and this conference is working on. So it's a product of the legislature and many voices. I would be just really, really disappointed if we left this legislature with a piece of legislation that had a loophole in it so significant that it meant really nothing in the process of transparency in the bidding process. And so I'm a little concerned about where we're landing right now. I'm glad that we have time for a recess and some time to think about it before we come back. And I think I'll just leave it at that for now.
And Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I guess I'd just like to hear Mr. Walsett was starting to say for the record, and I'd like to hear that statement.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, we were comfortable with the House language and the bid statute, the new subdivision aid coming into conference
for purposes of
the way that was structured.
Procedures.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to go back to the discussion about service co-ops and self-insured and things, and Council, and Senator Jensen, I think, makes a great point. Is you know, what is statutory defined as self-insured? I mean, do we have a statutory definition of self-insured? And I wanted to ask this also. Does it not include where you're making your payments to? If you're in a service co-op, who are you making your payments to? And if you're self-insured, who are you making your payments to? Your insurance payments. I mean, because there is a definite distinction and difference there. And so can that be used as part of the solution to this problem? And by the way, Madam Chair, there is a bill sitting in the House of Ways and Means that we could take up
Madam Chair?
Mr. Singh?
I'm trying to sort it out with Bjorn a little bit here. I point out to the members that in Section 10 of the Senate bill, which we adopted, on line 6.32, we are defining the service co-op pools as a provider of group insurance coverage. The bill is drafted to regulate what the districts do. So I believe under paragraph B, Mr. Walseth, a school district is fully able to get a bid from the service co-op for health coverage. The only thing we're trying to do with the self-insured language is define who is in or out for purposes of that more limited procedure. And that was our intention, and I still think it works.
Mr. Walseth.
Madam Chair, I know what Mr. Stang is referencing has been actually flagged as a potential concern by my client as well, labeling them for an entity providing group insurance coverage. They were comfortable with that because it said for purposes of this statute only. If it were for purposes broader into the insurance regulations, that would be, you know, getting Chapter 62. I mean, they would have concerns there. They felt that was narrow enough just for the mechanics of the bill. I know what you're doing. I think what you're trying to do is make sure that there's not a big loophole.
Correct.
And Representative Murphy, I don't want a big loophole either. I was fearful that my client was going to wake up in the summer and go, oh, we've got a big loophole, we don't have to do this, and then I'm going to face problems for Mr. Ward every year on out from that. So I think what I'd like to do is work with that Clause G, if we can, in the A22, to clarify that districts utilize that joint powers, which is going to be administered by a service cooperative, to ensure that there's no loophole there, that they're getting out of not having other people. And if we can do that and satisfy the interest of the bill and those involved, which is to make sure all those districts are getting a PFID and not getting into defining self-insured, fully insured, through a service cooperative pool in that section 14 of the E22, that would be a lot more comfortable. To get back to Mr. Stang's question, I've got to go and make a couple phone calls to really dig down into if that's comfortable enough or not.
So we're not adopting, we're not moving this language, so you will have time to do that, Mr. Walseth. Thank you for your testimony. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to talk a little bit about, we're talking about loophole. The only thing that they're not having to do is to go specifically to PEEP. They would still have to get the three bids. They would still have to go through the process of the competitive bidding process. They would still have to sit in front of the largest employer group through how those bids get opened and how the transparency part of it. So the transparency part to me in this bill is still maintained no matter what we do in Amendment 822, unless we don't say that they have to do three bids and leave them out altogether. And I think that's the question that we're wrestling with in 822. So a loophole to not have to go to a specific company, I think my concern was, are there differences in whether or not they can even accept the PEEP bid because of the status of whether they're self-insured or not? And that's why I would like some further clarification on what we're looking at as a definition throughout the bill on self-insured, and including what the difference is and why self-insureds aren't called service co-ops. I mean, because obviously there must be a difference. If you identify as a service co-op and other districts identify as a self-insured group, that identification is done for a reason, and I'd like to know what that reason is. And I think that there's something specific to how insurance gets paid for, who pays it, and the same things that we're talking about. But if they go for a PEEP bid and can't even utilize it, then there's an issue there that we had to address as far as self-insured groups are concerned. So I don't think the loophole is that big. I think it still maintains the integrity and the intent of the legislation from the beginning to allow transparency and employment group to take and participate in the process, which they don't have currently. That would be maintained. It's just this PEEP question on whether or not, and what is self-insured and service co-ops, and why do we make the distinction between the two? And we would have to, if we distinguish them different, we would need to do it in the legislation as well.
Thank you, Senator Jensen. There are other people, I understand, that wanted to testify on the 822 amendment, if they want, unless you have anything else to add, Mr. Walseth.
No, not at the moment. Okay. Done enough harm.
Mr. Kroonquist. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And joining me is Sherry Thompson, who is
the business manager with the Roseville Area Schools.
Madam Chair and members, testifying to the 822, we want to thank you very much for the addressing the self-insured issue. We were very strongly in support of the Senate provision that exempted self-insured school districts from the requirements. This doesn't quite get all the way there, but we understand that in this process, compromises need to be made, and so we do appreciate the movement. Self-insured districts feel very strongly that requiring them to follow through with the PEEP requirements just does not make sense. They are not in the group insured business anymore. They have moved to a totally different delivery model. They're self-insured. They've built up reserves. And when they are going out getting bids now, it's for TPAA and stop loss coverage. And so under the bill, they will be required to do that. And that's the book of business that they're doing. So we do appreciate the movement on that. I will turn it over to Ms. Thompson to talk about the timeline issue, which that was another issue that our fully insured school districts have been closely following.
Thank you. So Roseville Area Schools is not self-insured. We do have a group insurance plan, a fully insured. We are fully insured. Speaking to the timelines, as far as the 75 days, the 75 days we were able to live with. Some of the challenges that we have as a school district, of course, is making a decision, getting the information in, but then also getting that information out so that our board can make a decision and so that employees can make a decision, because we have open enrollment periods that must precede that renewal date on the insurance. So anything as far as if we get any tighter than the 75 days, it makes it somewhat challenging as far as the waiting the 10 days before the board actually makes a final decision. We can live with the 10 days. Anything beyond that, again, makes it challenging for not only for our board, but for our employees when they make their elections for the upcoming year.
So, Ms. Thompson, on the 10-day issue, because there has been over the weekend, there was discussion over whether it should be 10 days or 15 days or 20 days. If I understand it correctly, that 10-day window, so that's after the school district chooses from one of the final proposals, mm-hmm. then they have to wait at least 10 days under the A22 to make their final decision. So the bids become public, and they no sooner than 10 days, then the school board announces their decision. So, but within regard to the 75-day timeline, I don't really see how, if you already have to go out for the final proposals in 75 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's 10 or 15 days, it doesn't really back that process up much. So the main concern, if I'm not mistaken, so the main concern is that I'm having trouble understanding, because if you're not moving the 75 days, it's just within that window, whether it's 10 or 15 or 20.
So in our case, our renewal is July 1. So the 75 days would be April 15th. Approximately.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have to make that decision by April 15th. Again, and it's communicating, getting the information to the board and communicating that out. Also, the fact that most school boards meet twice a month. They may only take action once a month at their meetings. So just allowing for all of the timelines, I guess I don't know that maybe, 10 days versus 15 makes a difference, but really getting out beyond 15 would be challenging for us.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, one of the, I would say the primary objective of this piece of legislation is about transparency, to make sure that there's information available to the school districts, to the employees, to the public. There's a public good involved in this, and in the conversations, especially over the self-insured exemption piece, that there's just been real resistance, I think, to information and information in terms of an alternative bid. And I understand your position in the Senate, and you definitely view a PPID differently than we have in the House. We believe that it is coming from a self-insured pool. We believe that it is a benchmark and a decent competitor to what the self-insureds are doing, and I continue to express concern for those that are in the self-insured arena feeling or expressing a sense that they have figured out the world of insurance and that there is no further need for a scrutiny, if you will. To the window, first of all, the 75-day period has flexibility. If you look at the language in the A22, it talks about which is due no less than 75 days, so there is certainly flexibility there for the school districts, which school districts have requested throughout this process, and I think at least as we have worked on this bill in the House, have yielded repeatedly to requests for flexibility in terms of timelines. There's another example of it there in the A22, but with the idea of 10 days being difficult, I think that for the other interests that are, the other interests that are part of transparency, that would be school employees and the public, I think that 10 days is cutting short that opportunity. And so I just want to have on the record, and I know that I've spoken with Senator Steven about this as well, that 10 days just is inadequate from my perspective. If we want the public informed, if we think that it's important for school employees to be informed, and for those representing those school employees to be able to have a conversation so that they understand what's actually before them. And I would like that to be clearly stated on the record on behalf of the House. And with that, I'll close. Senator Sieben?
Senator Jensen.
Thank you. And thanks for reminding me. That I was thinking of the stop-loss coverage portion of what we're talking about. I'm not even sure if people will bid on a stop-loss coverage, if they even carry that. So that was with the intent of taking a look at, are there differences between a self-insured group and the actual practicality of how they're going to get a bid and if it's going to mean anything when they get it. If it's not going to mean anything when they get it, I understand then that that is a burden to everybody in time and taken away that we shouldn't make them do. We're trying to find efficiency and cost savings. So to have them go out for three bids is still allowing that process and competitive process to happen for the type of insurance that self-insured groups use. And that's what I wanted to find out with the co-ops then. Are they going out for group health insurance? If they're going out for group health insurance, it's vitally important to leave PEEP in, and that's why it's important to keep PEEP in that process and why we should take a look seriously at the language here in A22.
And Mr. Kronquist, just to go back to the 10-day proposal, if in the scenario Ms. Thompson outlined, the final proposals are due on April 15th, and that's the date at which there can be no more negotiations and the data becomes public, whether you have 10 or 15 days then for the school district to make a decision, or to make the decision, that doesn't really change. Does that change? Not the difference between 10 and 15, but like when the decision, it's 75 days before, so then you're at July 1st. So your point is that whether it's July 1st or then July 5th or 6th or whatever 5 days more is or 10 days more is, that further delays the decision? I guess I'm having trouble figuring out why it's 10 or 15 or 20, if that really backs up your decision, or if you're working within the 75-day time period anyway.
So in our case, whether it's 10 or 15 days, for instance, if we if there are no further negotiations after, say, April 15th, and then our board cannot make a decision for, they cannot take action for 10 days. So that puts us to April 25th. We also have to realize that at least the majority of our schools in Roseville, school is out the first week in June. So we need to have allowed time for the board to make a decision and for us to hold our open enrollment period and meet with the employees. And prior to the negotiations, at least in Roseville area schools, when we seek bids, when we put those RFPs out, we have an employee benefits committee, as do I think the majority of school districts, that actually review those proposals and those bids. And that committee they make a recommendation to our superintendent, to the administration, who then carries it to our school board. So there is some transparency there, and all bargaining units are represented.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy and then Mr. Kronquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifiers, can you talk more about the flexibility for the school districts when it says no less than 75 days? So certainly it could be 80 days, it could be 90 days. I mean, if the school district is managing the process properly, it would allow for you to administratively work within the law and give, at the end, the school district, school board, school employees, and the public time to scrutinize a window if it was set at 20 days. Is that not correct?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, yeah, I think that is correct.
Thank you.
And so a district may have to look at that. They may have to, if they don't think that 75 timeline is going to work, you may have to push it back to 80 or 85. You know, the only problem with that, you're trying to find this sweet spot, because the closer you can get, though, to the renewal date, the more recent the claims date is going to be that you can submit to the providers, and the more accurate data you're going to get. I think that's what you'll hear from the plans. But your point is well taken. Just on the timelines, keep in mind, too, that if your renewal date is July 1st, like Roseville's is, they're really hoping to wrap up their open enrollment process by the end of May or very early June,
right,
because their staff then is gone. And once the staff leaves and is gone for the summer, it's really difficult. A district that renews on January 1st actually has a similar situation because the last 2 weeks of December, generally winter break, and again, the staff is gone. So you're trying to wrap up your open enrollment process earlier than the actual effective date. So that's just another point to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Ms. Schwab. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the School Boards Association. I appreciate coming in and seeing the A22. I think it shows an understanding of what school districts are trying to do when they're implementing this charge. As we reviewed it quickly, we do have a list of self-insured school districts. Our list has 39, and I'll be happy to provide it to the committee so you could see what districts are involved. The question that I wasn't sure about is I know for sure of two districts that are in the process of becoming self-insured. They're not there at the end yet, so I think how this legislation would address them, it'd be nice to figure that out so they know going forward.
And Ms. Kelleher, is it your understanding that that's Spring Lake Park and Matamidi?
I believe
Hastings.
Hastings, right, which obviously I represent, but my understanding is that they have over 1,000 insured lives.
I just want to make sure that we make it clear of those going through the process as this becomes enacted. I think it's important to clarify what a self-insured is in this bill. Clearly, it sounds like we have different perceptions about how that would work. And as we read the legislation, it seems school districts are meant to go out and get three bids and then come back as a board, and the board makes the decision with the help of the employees. We're a little bit concerned about the timelines, and we're just going to make a timeline and see how that works together. I think there is some good argument, as Mr. Kuhnquist pointed out, about those timelines. You want them compressed, but you want them to be able to work when the employees are in the building. I also want to put in that last paragraph, H, on page 2 of the amendment, where you've got a 90-day, we must give at least 90 days if a plan change comes forward. And I just want to make sure that that timeline works going forward. And so sometimes as we come back, I'd like an opportunity to speak to that. The self-insureds are really a different animal. They really only bid for administrative services and stop-loss coverage. It's a very small part of it, and it makes sense to make some allowances for them so at least they get information that is relative to their health plan they're looking at. So with that, Madam Chairman, as I said, I appreciate how far you've come on this. We just want to take a little bit more time and digest it.
Madam Chair, members of the Conference Committee, Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity and Education. I'm always glad when Mr. Kuhnquist goes first and when I agree with him, because then I can just say I agree with much of what Mr. Kuhnquist said. We strongly supported the Senate position coming as we came into Conference Committee. You've probably heard from a number of C districts in support of that provision, and we certainly think that the self-insured, as Ms. Kelleher has said, deserves some kind of distinction and some kind of recognition for the work that they've done in putting together strong insurance programs for their employees. The clarification of the self-insured, I think, is also very, very important. And I can, just basically leave it at that, but we certainly think that the Senate position is very important to our organization and the self-insured districts that are members of our organization. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hager, did you want to speak to the A22 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I will defer to my boss president, Lee Specht, I think, to make an opening comment.
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here, and thank you for taking up this important work. I agree with Representative Murphy that this bill represents a collective work of many people, and I think that it represents everything that we set out to accomplish: transparency, accountability, and bringing some sunlight into a process that is very important. That being said, I also believe that the A22 amendment, which we support, strengthens that and ensures all of those things are accomplished. I am certainly glad to report back to the educators, the support staff, the custodians, the bus drivers that we represent, that so many people are also interested in those things. It's really encouraging to know that so many people are standing behind them and making sure that they not only have affordable health care, but they have an option. So many of them are paying their districts to work to get health insurance, and many of them have nothing at all. So thank you for the work, and I'm going to send it back over to James, but wanted to offer that opportunity.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, James Hager with Education Minnesota. I just wanted to make a couple quick comments. One is just on that the testimony that we heard about, 75 days. I just wanted to stress that the language in the A22 is that it's no less than 75 days, and therefore, if a district wants the flexibility, either with when they open the final bids or when that window of 10 or whatever days is, they certainly have the flexibility to do that with whatever makes sense for them. The second thing I would say, just on the comment about paragraph H and the plan design changes or changes in rates, we just make the comment that that's specific in the amendment to multi-year contracts. And so in that, and Mr. Stang, correct me if I'm wrong, in that paragraph, what we're really addressing is if a district has, let's say, a four-year contract, and throughout that contract, their rates are going to go up or the plan design is going to change. Just want to make sure that the employees have that information and have it in a reasonable amount of time before that change takes effect. Finally, I would just say, a lot of comments about the PPID as it relates in general and to self-insured districts, and you would just say that we think, what we've seen in our experience is that the PPID is a great baseline, that when it's involved, competition, it sort of typically drives down the costs of the other bids, and that it's a great baseline and an option for districts, self or fully insured, to look at. We would also say that nothing in the law requires a specific analysis of that PPID. Certainly nothing requires that PPID to be accepted and coverage to change. And so we don't think that there's any burden or challenge or issue with the district receiving that PPID. But we do, as President Speck said, support the A22 and appreciate everyone's work on the amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Speck, to Mr. Hager. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on the A22 amendment? And then, just to be clear, we'll recess after this and then hopefully come back later today and move some version of the A22 amendment and then wrap up. At least that would be my hope.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director, Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I want to thank the chair and members of the committee for the work they've done on A22. I particularly want to thank you for in subsection 8, paragraph E, which talks about the process that's going to be used by districts when the bids are received. Our school districts, as well as our employees, want to have the opportunity to get the best possible prices for the type of coverage needed, and the process that's explained in paragraph E, I think, is one that will work well for our districts, as well as for our colleagues in our unions, and we're just thankful that we've been able to come up with language like this that I think meets the needs of all the parties, and thank you for your efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. So at this time, we will recess with the welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I'm representing Preferred One, and with me is Barbara Cox with Health Partners. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify and for the work that you've done so far. We appreciate the Senate position. We still prefer the Senate language as it came from the floor with a complete exemption for self-insurance. And I have a chart that I'd like to hand out to you just so that you're aware of the difference between the costs of self-insurance and fully insured. Simply, taxes and assessments make up almost a 10% difference between a fully insured product and a self-insured product. And that's one of the main reasons, if you're interested in making sure that premiums are cheaper for people who are self-insured versus those who are fully insured, that you need to keep that self-insurance exemption on the table. To the question that Representative Davids issued earlier, I don't have, Madam Chair and members, the smallest groups that are fully insuring versus self-insuring in the state, and I've asked for that. I'll try and get that during the recess so that you members have it. Madam Chair and members, the other issue that I would just say is if we can do anything to make it easier in terms of the timelines that you've been talking about with the districts, we as insurance carriers are trying our best to work within these tight time frames, but we don't want to make them too tight. I think we heard from Education Minnesota that we can make them longer. That really helps a great deal. If there are further questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But at this point in time, we believe that...
Mr. Griffith, to that point, on Mr. Kroonquist's explanation that the closer you get to the renewal date, the district is able to provide better claims data, would you agree with that statement?
Madam Chair, members, absolutely. It does make it easier. One of the things that I think is a misconception by a lot of lay people is that we're able to turn data on a dime, and that is not the case. To run reports on a district does take some time, so that if you know when your date is coming up, you have enough advance notice to request those reports and get them out, it really makes it a lot easier. So. Those time frames are not just whatever the statutory is. It's also making sure that you're in the queue for whatever data requests that you need, so knowing those far enough in advance helps. Does that answer your question?
Well, and Mr. Griffith, that's why I think this has been somewhat tricky to figure out, but I think that the flexibility in the language where it says no less than 150 days or no less than 90 or 75 days will make this more... workable, or will make it workable for you as plans as well as for the school districts to be able to adapt to those timelines. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Griffin, in terms of the claims data and the timelines, would 10 days make a significant difference in terms of rates?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I think it depends on where those 10 days fall. You know, if it falls when reports are being made at the beginning of a month or the end of a month or the middle of the month, depending on where they're made, that can be, 10 days plus 20 rather than just a straight 10 days. So, yes.
Madam Chair and Mr. Griffin, would it be better for us to be very specific about the date of the month that the timelines rest?
Madam Chair, so Representative Murphy, I don't think it would be more helpful. I think it would be less helpful.
Right. So... then, Madam Chair and Mr. Griffin, do you think we could live with, I guess I would like from you, if you could provide for us or for me, information about how claims data 10 days closer to the selection of a contract would make a significant difference in terms of cost.
Madam Chair.
If that's really possible.
Madam Chair, I will talk to my client and get back to you during the recess.
Representative Ward.
Yeah, just on that point, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. On that point, do you typically just use a year of data for looking at rates? What's the spread? Because to me, it seems like if you want a better picture for rates, you would look at a longer time period, which really wouldn't impact. If you look at a longer time period, wouldn't necessarily impact closer to the date, in my opinion. So what do you use for solid rate data?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Griffin.
Representative Ward, it depends on the product, of course. If you're in a fully insured group, we want to look at as much claims data as we possibly can. Usually, I shouldn't say usually, we demand 2 years claims data.
Okay.
And you try and get that going back as far as you can. I can tell you, and I don't think it's any secret in the business, trying to get claims data is a difficult thing with some carriers, so we argue back and forth about what's available, whether it's year-to-date, a calendar year, or on a renewal year, or on a closest to the month that we're doing. Those all come into the negotiations, and there's nothing set solid. If it's a self-insured group, we're looking at claims data on behalf of the district, and it's whatever they've got from their current self-funded carrier. And they usually have pretty good claims data because they are processing, and they are the ones billing the account that the claims get paid out of regularly as a district, so they're pretty up to date.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Ward.
Thank you. So then clearly, the more data that you can get over a period of time, the better you can, your actuaries and all those folks can determine rates, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, yes.
Thank you.
Members, Barbara Cox from Health Partners. I won't belabor this. I just wanted to say thank you for the tons and tons of work that you have done on this. We appreciate the changes to try to bridge the House and Senate positions in this amendment. And on the chart, we hope to work with you on some of those issues next year.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Is there anyone else who wants to testify to the A22 amendment? Seeing none, the conference committee is in recess until the call to chair.